ਇੰਨੇ ਵੈਰੀ ਫੋਗਣੇ ਜ਼ਰੂਰ ਬੰਦੇ ਆ। ਬੰਦਾ ਸਿੰਘ ਦੂਰ ਮੈਨੂੰ ਜੋਸ਼ ਜਾਗਿਆ, ਦੇਣ ਲੱਗੇ ਦਸਵੇਂ ਤੇ ਤਾਰੀ ਆਗਿਆ। ਅੰਗ ਸੰਗ ਸਮਾਂ ਦੀ ਹਜ਼ੂਰ ਬੰਦੇ ਆ, ਇੰਨੇ ਵੈਰੀ ਫੋਗਣੇ ਜ਼ਰੂਰ ਬੰਦੇ ਆ। ਬੰਦਣਾ ਜਿਉਂਦਾ ਨੀ ਵਜ਼ੀਰ ਖਾਨ ਨੂੰ, ਮਿੱਟੀ ਕਮਲ
listener discretion is advised. Mature audiences only.
Welcome to episode 10 of Tanking's podcast. I'm joined by my co-host Sarpanch and a very Hello. Special guest. Hello, Sarpanch. We have a special guest with us. We lovingly call him Ter, sometimes Terry, and even Thorlochin back in the day. Why I wanted Ter to come on this podcast, because he's a vegan and he's a very staunch vegan, but his story is very, very interesting and we're going to get into that. So welcome, Ter. Thanks for joining us, man.
Yeah. Welcome. Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
So before we get into the vegan subject, I want to talk about all these reports coming out, seeing that we're in Canada and obviously you guys are out there in BC and Surrey and stuff, that all these there's a lot of reports coming out, like these international students up like Punjab be sick, they're overdosing in quite alarming numbers, and basically the Surrey Gurdwara are in charge of doing the funerals and sending the bodies home because they get the power of attorney from the parents, because the parents feel helpless out in India. And I honestly wasn't aware that it was that bad. Like it's they're saying like almost like the funeral home is saying one or two a week are overdosing, that they're getting those bodies at their funeral homes.
Yeah, I actually I was reading this article by CBC. There's like a disproportionate amount of young South Asian men who are dying of overdoses. One of the, I guess, the presidents of the one of the Surrey Gurdwaras was saying recently there have been like four young men in the past few weeks under 30 who have died of overdose. So it's alarming. I didn't know it was that bad.
And it costs $10,000 basically a body to send it back home. So the I think there was one Gurdwara saying in the last like 7 months they've spent about $100,000. Sending wow. these kids.
Yeah. You know what, guys? this situation is not only, I think, affecting our community, but I think it's also affecting like other communities and international students coming down here, because like I just started this immigration program. And we actually got kind of, we haven't deep dived into this, but you know, there's definitely a big push from these consultants and even lawyers who recruit people and they send them to India, and then they basically say, hey, come to Canada. It's such a better life. It's a great life. Like just sell everything that you got here and just make it happen. And these guys are just making massive commissions and they send everyone over here. And the biggest thing is, man, like these families give up everything and these kids come down here and they're forced to live in like conditions with like 10 people, 12 people. They're working like all night, man, all day. And then they have school and they have like these crazy international fees. And like, do you blame them? Like their only resort, their only escape is drugs. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think this is not even like a community problem. I think this is like a social problem, like in sense of like Canada, just not doing a good enough job to house the people that they're bringing in. And it's a such a tough subject, and I don't know, like, if you guys have any thoughts, but
yeah, I think, like you were saying, Terry, I think the preparations, Canada doesn't prepare properly for these international students to come here. Like, I've heard stories out here in Alberta where these kids don't even have proper winter gear when they come from the airport. So if they're coming in the dead of winter,
they're
literally kapri that they bring from India. It's like they're not even aware of how cold it is. And again, I think it's a failure by the Canadian system where they're pushing, you know, for all this immigration. But, you know, where's the, you know, where are the avenues for the for these young students to be? First, they should have some sort of preparation coming here, and also when they come here, there should be also systems where, you know, if they're going through depression or if they're going through certain things, they should be, you know, they should have an idea of where to go if they're going through this, like with the housing and all that, and you know, we've heard stories about some employers who literally use them as slave labor and don't even pay them.
That's happening. Like, I don't know if you guys heard this, but the government recently allowed international workers to work up to 40 hours now, which I think is going to help the situation. Before, they were only, like, people who were students could only work up to 20 hours a week. Now they're able to work 40, and that'll create a little more regulation. They don't have to work under the table, because you're right, man. Like, if you're working under the table, like, they don't really have any sort of grounds. Like, they can't go to a lawyer and say, hey, this guy didn't pay me, because they weren't working anyways, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, they can't go to employment standards, right? They can't go to the BC, let's say, for example, they can't go to the BC government and put a complaint in, right? Because there's no, I mean, again, it's under the table. So, and again, people, employers, and it's sad to say, it's our own Punjabi sick, you know, these employers, these uncles or auntie or whoever, and they know the system too. So they know that they don't have to pay these guys if they don't have to. And there's no way that these students can go. The only way that a lot of these students can get any type of justice is they'll protest outside the employer's house. Like, I've seen videos of that. That's the only thing they can do. And yeah, man, it's almost
they're exploited for sure. They're underpaid and sometimes overworked, actually, and sometimes even not paid. Like, they come here and they obviously have to pay their own tuition, which is, like, excessive international student fees, like Tara mentioned. They pay for their own housing. Now they cook their own food. They do their own laundry. They didn't have to do those things before. That's why a lot of them go back, probably. But that's a big culture shock for any, like, really young person, a teenager or, like, you know, person in their young 20s.
Yeah. No, that's true, because maybe some of them, not all of them, but I guess some of them, maybe they're, like, I don't want to say spoiled, but maybe they get all everything at home and stuff. Then when they come here, it's almost like now we got to live off basically pizza and stuff.
It's a huge culture
shock. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, man. It's pretty sad, to in my opinion, like, what's going on. There's another thing that's kind of going on as well that I don't think we've even got into, is, like, the corruption on the back end of the industry. It's not even that they're being exploited. So I know for a fact, so the immigration industry is now under a college because of all the fraud that has been going on over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And what people were doing was, like, these immigration consultants would go to, like, a pizza shop, right? And some uncle's working, or uncle owns the pizza shop, and he's like, hey, man, I'll give you $50,000. You know, we're going to bring in a student. He's going to pay you 10 grand, and he's going to give you $40,000 in labor, and you just have to make him fake pay stubs, right? So these guys are now paying 10 grand or 15 grand to the consultant, 10, 15 grand to this pizza shop, and then they have to work up to $40,000 or $50,000 worth of labor hours and not get paid, just pay stubs so they can earn enough points to get their PR. So imagine working 12-hour days and not making a dime. Just so you don't get deported. And that's happening.
So that's a huge mental weight on these students.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, basically, man, like they're being treated like slaves. You know, if you go to any, at least I'm speaking about BC because this is where I live and what I see, but if you go to any fast food joint, any gas station, even the mall, like retail stores, it's all Apne students, man. Like mm-hmm. they're pulling the weight. Like,
yeah, they are.
Here, I don't know who the hell's working at those places.
Because Gore kids are they're not going to work there anymore, man. Like that would, I think we were probably the last of that generation that you know, people born in the Western countries, they'll work in these places now, right?
Yeah, but I was thinking a lot of these you know, fast food places, it's mostly Upper Nile. I think the only spot that still hires like Gore for that like is Starbucks, maybe, where you don't see a lot of Upper Nile. But otherwise, yeah, you're right, it's all Upper Nile.
Well, those crazy lattes and cappuccinos, man, that stuff is pretty complicated.
Yeah, it's complicated. You know what I was thinking? Do you think that, you know, the drug use, where do you think its origins are? Do you think it starts, you know, when they're already in Punjab and when they come here, they kind of just continue a habit? Or do you think the first time they experiment is here?
I think it could be both, man. I think either they were already semi-addicted or addicted in India, because Punjab has a huge drug problem. Like it's crazy stupid how much of a drug problem there is. Mm. Or the other facet is they come here and they have so much freedom, and either that or stress of all that, the bullshit stuff that employers do and all that, and that they think that they have to bring their family here. All the weight is on their shoulders. They succumb to doing drugs or you know, hard drugs or drinking liquor and stuff like that. So I think that there's a couple reasons why that there's such a huge drug problem among students. I don't know, that's my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I do think that, you know, majority of these people have maybe dabbled with drugs, used them in the past at home, and then they come here. And I think the biggest thing is freedom, right? Like they're under their parents' house in India or wherever they are, and they come here and they have ample freedom. They can do whatever they want. They can come home whenever they want. They can, you know, bring home a girl that they couldn't do before. They can do whatever they want, right? So I think it's just that influx of freedom going from 0 to 100. And then just, you know, drug use is a scary thing, guys, right? Like, it doesn't take much. Mm-hmm. If you use it once or twice, like, you can be hooked, right? That's all it takes. Mm-hmm. So it's a slippery slope. And even if you look at Vancouver, like, we're generally in a crisis, right? Like, we are in a epidemic of a crisis when it comes to drug use. And I'm not surprised that it's affecting, you know, the South Asian community, because, you know, it's the same thing when it comes down. You got freedom and you can do things that you just couldn't do before.
No, you said it. That's mm-hmm. correct. Actually, a few years ago, I was at a barber and we were discussing international students, and she was telling me that she often gets like students that have, you know, patkas, and they all come like with all their buddies. And they make it like a huge event to cut their hair, like their first haircut. That's a big deal for them, right? And they're telling her, like, oh, they had their first cheeseburger since coming to Canada. You know, they're getting their first haircut. And this is all new to them. So to them, it's like, I guess to some of these people, it's like, these are new life experiences that they never had before. So, I agree with you, Tara.
And being like a port city, Vancouver, I mean, we know that usually port cities are hit pretty hard with drugs and stuff. But going back to what Tara was saying with like with bringing girls home or whatever, remember Sarpanch, that there was that whole I forgot what's the radio host name, man, that brought this up, that there was a lot of abortions happening between.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a lot of abortions happening and babies being left at the hospital, and and these girls saying that they don't want to keep the baby because obviously they're not married or whatever, and now they're pregnant, and the Surrey's has a huge problem with that right now. Like it's And people, I don't think even Aparna realized that. Like, it's going to come up, like, how this story came up with the drugs and stuff. But
you know what, man? People don't talk about that stuff, and like it needs to be brought up.
The people having orgies in freaking basements and stuff, man.
Yeah, it's sad. And then these young girls, they're in a conflict. They don't know, like, because maybe if they take the child home and tell their parents, obviously some of them might face backlash, right? So they don't know what to do. Yeah, they don't have enough support, basically.
I don't think there's any chance they could tell their family back home if they're not married. I don't think it's a plausibility.
Yeah, I guess. And then, like, there's this a huge thing. And when radio hosts started bringing it up, it's these people, woke people try to spin it as, what was Sarpanch? They're trying to spin it as, like, a feminist thing, was it? Like, yeah, anti-feminist?
I guess the controversy back then was the way Harjunathan framed it was like, Harjunathan, his delivery was pretty bad. Like, what he said was that they should basically say the names of the moms, right? Which is wrong. Like, you don't want to, disclose privacy. So, there was a movement to get him canceled over that, which is, Harjunathan should not have said that. I agree. But what Harjunathan was concerned about, he was concerned about the safety of these kids, obviously, right? So there needs to be more discussion about it. It's funny. There was very little discussion about what to do with these kids, right? What do we do? What's the solution with these babies?
You know what the fucked up thing is, man? Like, working in law enforcement, these orphan kids and all that are usually... Man, it's a sad life. Like, they usually fall prey to a lot of fucking shit, man. And it's like, these are, like, people within our community that, like,
they gotta go in the system, basically.
Basically, and then anybody can adopt them, or if, like, and like, what's the future? Like, what if they don't get adopted by a proper person, or they get adopted by, like, a predator or whatever? Like, it's like, we're just like our qom, like, we're turning into like a, I don't even know what the word to use, man. Like, it's just, it's sad. At the end of the day, it's just sad. Like, there's, like, we're living the Canadian dream. We piss away our honor and our culture and a lot of shit. We just flush down the toilet just for the sake of, I mean, how good of a life do you really have in Canada at the end of the day, too? Like, Chal, we're born here, but we all fucking work our asses off. We all went to school and all that. Like, it's not like a leisurely life where you're sitting on the beach in, like, fucking Florida or, like, the Dominican Republic, like, every month. Like, even trying to, like, get housing and buy a house or whatever, it's such a pain. Like, it's not paradise.
You gotta hustle. Yeah, you gotta hustle if you're here. Yeah, for sure. 100%.
Dude, you're being sold a dream in Canada, right? So, like, Canada is in a particular situation. Like, they're in big trouble, right, when it comes to population growth. So
you have a declining birth rate.
Exactly. So we have a declining birth rate to the point where it's so low that we just don't have enough money, right? So that's the biggest issue. So Canada says, well, shit, guys, we don't have enough money to support pensions down the road. We don't have enough money to support healthcare down the road. And with an aging population, we don't have enough workers. We don't have enough money going into the system. So, you know, the biggest thing is they need tax money, right? And so they're immigrating people into the country, and they're just looking at your bank account. You just have to show how much wealth you have. So that's why a lot of people in India, they'll sell land and they'll have ample amount of money in their account, and they just need to show that one time. They can disperse the funds, or they'll use a bunch of family money and put it into one account just to show these immigration officers, like, hey, I got this much money. And then Canada will make the decision in accepting you or not. Mm. Like, year over year, like, the immigrants coming from India has increased substantially. Whereas you look at other countries like China, it's actually decreased. Less Chinese are coming to Canada year over year. So it's interesting, man. Like Canada's in a particular situation, and you know, obviously we need immigration. But I think the biggest thing here is, like, even as us as a community, I think we can do more just to help integrate these people coming in. And whether if it is like support programs and systems that we can kind of help with, like, you know, I think we can, you know, as a community, help these people, right? Like, they shouldn't just have to go to the Godwara and ask help from like some random uncle or you know. I think as a community, we can do a better job just integrating and helping.
I think it's time. Sorry, Sukpanch, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say we need to create better support systems for, like, you know, these young women who are, you know, giving birth and then don't have options. And also, you know, these young women and men with, you know, substance abuse issues. I don't know if it's a relatively new problem. Maybe it's an old problem that's just come to light recently, right? I have no idea, but
yeah,
our community has to do something.
I think we as a community, as a, like, I'm talking about the Punjabi Sikh community. I think we have to start investing money into like these rehab type of clinics and stuff that are really focused on Punjabi, you know, be like that population, instead of building like these bio business center fucking types of shit.
Yeah, dude, that's true.
Into all this other bullshit. Like, we need to set up these clinics where people can go get help. Like, have a psychologist there, have like a dharmic person there, have everything there for that person so they can get clean, instead of just saying, you know, saying Chal Koina, you'll be fine, or tying a chain to their leg and tying them to like to a bedpost so they don't leave the house, and then, you know, they freaking choke on their own, you know, saliva. That's not the way to do it. There needs to be a proper cure for this stuff. Like, and we can't even say that Punjabi Sikhs don't have money as a community. We have a lot of money as a community. We have no problem building like a bunch of gurdwari within like a 5-block radius, right? And look, I'm a Samartari Sikh. There's obviously nothing wrong with having a gurdwara, but you can also do seva in a different way, and these clinics can do that for that person, right? And you can always have like a spiritual aspect to that clinic also, where people can connect to Barney and history and itihas, and have somebody there giving them a proper diet to get back on track. I don't know. That's my opinion. What do you guys think?
I think that's a great idea. You actually see some of that in American cities, right? Like substance abuse rehab centers that also have like a Christian faith element. So that's a great idea. Someone, you know, I think it's, if someone can do that, I mean, I wish I could, but I think as a community, we need to kind of take responsibility and forge our own path on that front.
Yeah, I think it's like, you know, we're all saying it sounds great on paper, but it's just easier said than done. Like, who's going to do it, right? And I think it really is going to take like back end work. And I also think as a community, like the Punjabi community needs to just work through the stigma of some of these issues that we have as a community. Like, a lot of times, you know, we'll hide people's addiction issues, right? Like, I know on your guys' last podcast, I listened to it, like, it's pretty common for families to hide that there's an alcoholic in their family.
Right? Yeah. No one wants to admit that.
Everyone lives in denial. And it's the same thing here, right? If a girl gets knocked up, right, international student or your daughter, you're going to hide it, right? It's not going to be on the forefront. Like, you're not going to want to talk about it because it brings shame. So I think internally, like, we're always battling, like, we want to be better as a community, but sometimes we don't want to face things head on. So I think it starts there, right? If we can kind of tackle these issues just as they come and just be direct, I think we'll just be better as a community.
What I've noticed, though, like, it seems like it's more of a problem. Like, all this stuff is more of a problem in the Punjabi Sikh community compared to like Punjabi Muslim and Punjabi Hindu community. And we need to really look at, why is that the fucking case here? Like, why is it Punjabi Sikhs that are having these addiction problems and stuff like that. I'm sure there's probably other Punjabis that do go through it, but the majority of the case is us. And we can't say majority of Punjab, whether it be in Pakistan Punjab or India Punjab, is majority Sikh, right? There's a huge population of Hindus and a huge population of
It's disproportionate. That CBC article that I was talking about, I guess they have some algorithm to know whether they're actually Sikh Punjabi people, and it's like disproportionately Sikh Punjabi, which is, you know, why is that?
I think we glorify a lot of that stupid shit in our media too, right? Like within the songs and movies and all that stuff, compared to other communities. I mean, we all listen to that stuff, right? Growing up, like the Daru songs and all that. And we used to listen to that stuff while drinking Daru too. So we also glorify it so much, like within our artistic whatever fucking shit.
Yeah, that's the weird thing. It's like it's glorified, but then if you have it, then there's a stigma attached to it, right? It's like...
you can't win.
Yeah. You know what's funny, Terry? You mentioned like that stigma. So, I've actually many years ago, I went to a wedding where the bride. It was basically a rush wedding because this bride, I guess, was pregnant. So her parents were like, we gotta fucking, you know, you gotta marry the guy. And they like within 1 month, literally, man, they had like this wedding, and everyone knew she was pregnant. Like, that stigma exists, man. Like.
Was she born here?
Yeah, this is not. Yeah, this ain't no international student or anything. This is a person born here.
Mm.
Yeah, it's common, guys. Like this stigma that we have in our community. It's just got to stop, right? And it just comes from within, and you know, as we're new parents, like, you know, we have, you know, you're a parent of two kids, man, and like mm-hmm. You know, as you're going through the process of being a parent, like you're going to see all this. And I think the stigma is going to get less and less as we go through generations Right. And it tends to fall off. Right. But it's hard, right? Because when you're going from one country to the other, you're starting all over again. Right. When you move from India to here, like the culture, like the changes are all different. Right. But when you're, you know, growing throughout Canada and you have your next set of kids or whatever, there's changes that are going to happen within the community.
Yeah.
No, I don't obviously have a science background, but I've read that, alcoholism or just your propensity to be, you know, addicted to any sort of substance, there are environmental and biological factors to it, right? So like some of it, like if you've got in your ancestry, a lot of people, you know, big time drinkers, your propensity towards that is also greater. Obviously there's environmental factors as well. So that's another thing, right? You don't even know it, but like when you excessively drink or do substances, you are in some way passing that along, to your kin. So,
Well, that's the problem that the First Nations have, and like Indigenous, like I think it's called alcohol fetal syndrome, something like that.
Oh yeah. See, you're planting seeds, right? You know how they say, you know, what you reap what you sow. You're unknowingly planting seeds when you know you don't even know it.
Mm-hmm. Like with my job and stuff, like I see a lot of the criminals that come from First Nations, Indigenous places, they have AFS, or I think that's what's called alcohol fetal, something like that. Basically, basically their parents were addicted to liquor, and then it just gets passed on straight to the baby, and the baby's basically born with that pyaas, that thirst for liquor again, and then it just causes a spiral, and it just continues on. Like from Piri to Piri to Piri to, like it just keeps going. Like it's sad, man. Like it's sad when you see like just generations just deteriorated to nothing and basically just scrunching for whatever they can.
Yeah. So, the First Nations thing is sad, man. It is all by design, right? Like they,
mm-hmm.
like the white man just gave them just like threw them in these reservations and was like, here's ample amount of alcohol. And that's basically what happened, right?
Yeah, it was calculated. Yeah.
And if you look at the model of Punjab, like the Indian government is basically using that same model, right? Because when I look at the Indian government, right, they use a very British style of ruling, like the way they want to like crush any rebellion or whatever. They have a very British style approach, like the British Empire, and basically same thing. Like they're pumping so much drugs into Punjab. Like, why is it? I mean, you can say it's a border state or whatever, but there's other border states in India too that are not as affected as Punjab. So, and it's Punjabi Sikhs that are majority of the addicted individuals. So just
how much do you think? You know, do you think some of it is like some systemic like efforts by somebody to, you know, kind of bring drugs and alcohol into the Punjabi communities? Like, you know, do you think that exists
in India? There was also now stories coming out during the late 80s when Gurdas Mann and KPS Gill, I don't know, KPS Gill was known as like a fucking genocidal freak who killed a lot of Gursikhs that were fighting against the Indian government and innocent people also. Gurdas Mann and these singers were giving like Kuli Shuti to sing like stuff that really took away people from their spiritual practices.
Yeah.
And so just like how with the British to kill the Indian or the indigenous or the First Nations out of a First Nations individual, you basically douse them with substances. They'll never rebel against you once they're so addicted to something. They're not going to have the fighting spirit to do anything. And we've seen this with the First Nations people for the last 150 years, right? They, like at one point, they were the British feared these tribes because they were one, they wouldn't surrender. Two, they were great warriors. And three, their spirituality was basically what gave them all that power and ankh and that courage to fight against the British. Once they introduced liquor and all that stuff to the First Nations, one or two generations later, nobody's now fighting, you know, going up and fighting these wars against the British. And the British easily then wrote treaties to take over land. And then what do they do? They send them to the reservations. And then what do? They create these schools. They create these schools. And then that's how they exterminate the spirituality and the culture of the First Nations within that person. That exact same model you're seeing in Punjab, like these schools where they say you can't wear a kada, you can't wear your kakadas, you can't wear the star. They openly shit talk our gurus and all that. That same thing is happening in Punjab right now. Mm-hmm. They're trying to kill that spirit. And look at now, Amritpal Singh in Punjab, a lot of people who are addicted to drugs are now taking Amrit and bettering their lives. There's so many drug dealers in Punjab, but none of them are getting arrested. But all of Amritpal Singh's, you know, entourage, they're getting arrested one by one. For what? Why isn't the government going after the drug dealers and these drug kingpins? They're not, because it's all interrelated. But they're going after the person, and there's so much propaganda thrown against him because, again, he's going against the whole system, right? Again, 84, same thing. Sant Pindrangle. Why was there such a huge propaganda swing against him? He was going against the system. So I see like very close relations between how the Indian government is running specifically Punjab and what the British did here in Canada with the First Nations. I see it like we're basically seeing it like par on exactly what they're doing.
Go ahead, Derek.
You bring up a good point, man. I agree. It does, like, you know, I don't know too much about what's going on exactly in Punjab, but based on everything you're describing, it sounds exactly like it's by design, right? Like, India's pretty strict when it comes to drugs, you know, like when it comes to like the movement of drugs, at least. And if there's an area that has an ample amount of them, right? It's got to be because of design. It's on purpose. So it's pretty sad.
Yeah, it's. Yeah, I think it seems like there's people are awakening and stuff, and like the whole Amarthpal thing, like, kind of like a Sikhi revolution happening in Punjab where people are kind of cleaning up and stuff. I think that there is now a reckoning that's about to happen. But I guess let's move on now. So the vegan subject, Terry.
Yeah.
I'm with you. And the reason why I love your story is because you were such an extreme at one point, and now you're at the other spectrum. So what I remember is, man, you used to eat meat barbecue almost every day at one point. And I remember every time we used to go to
ribs, he would eat ribs.
Yeah, like, go to a bar, we're eating like this random, this shitty ass food. But you know, Terry would have like a huge, you know, nice spare ribs, you know, eating it nicely with his fork, knife, and stuff. But now you turned vegan. So,
yeah.
What was your. Now, walk us through what made you change, like from being eating meat almost, basically eating meat every day, and to a point where I think you almost had health problems almost you had with the meat.
So I'll get into it, guys. Like, you're fucking right, man. I used to eat a lot of meat, and you know, I grew up eating meat. Like, I'll explain my household first. So I grew up, it was myself, my mom, my dad, and my brother. My mom has always been vegetarian, and my dad and my brother and myself, we ate meat. So my mom would make us, you know, she'd make us like butter chicken, you know, like chicken curry, whatever, you know, you name it, she'd make the meat for us. So throughout my entire childhood and into my teens and even into my adult life, I was eating meat. And as I got older, you know, I think this is after high school and we used to go out and stuff. Yeah. Like, dude, I just thought in my head that I needed it. Like, I was so set on the fact that I needed this to be bigger physically. Right. So like for me, I'll be pretty candid about my story. Like, I was always a smaller guy. Like, getting out of high school, I was maybe like 100 pounds, like 105 pounds, super skinny, like extremely underweight. And you know, as I got into, I started working out, getting in the gym, you know, I start to see changes, and I complemented this by eating meat. I enjoyed eating meat. I loved it. Like, it tasted good to me. And I ate a lot of it, right? Like, I remember I used to go to Nando's, man, like after a workout, I used to order like an entire half chicken, eat it at that one sitting, and then like go home and cook something on the barbecue. And it was common, man. Like, it was a lot, right? So I met my girlfriend, who is now my wife, and she was vegetarian at the time, and she's always been vegetarian. She grew up vegetarian, like her family is all vegetarian. But she was going through some health issues, and she decided to go pescatarian. So pescatarian is the introduction of seafood. So she's eating vegetarian, but she also would eat seafood. So as we were dating, you know, she has her concept of her diet, and I have my concept of my diet. And you know, she started feeling bad about going pescatarian, about eating fish, because she was having iron issues and other things like that. And so she reverted back. And I remember, like, we were probably like a year into dating, and we're just generally talking, and she was over at my house, and I was making something. It was like ground beef or something, and she was like, you know, like, you can't bring this shit in our house, like, if we're married or whatever, like, I don't want you cooking this. And I remember, like, we got in a big fight. Like, I remember, well, what's the big deal? Like, why can't I? Like, what's the issue? You know, just not putting myself in her shoes. But anyways, you know, like, she had a big influence on me in the way I thought about vegetarianism and now veganism. You know, I got introduced to more vegetarian meals, right? Because she's vegetarian. she's making a lot of this food. And I was like, man, you know what? It's not that bad, you know? And also at the same time, I got a dog. And I think that was kind of like the breaking point, or like the light bulb kind of going off in my head, where I was starting to, you know, really kind of conceptualize the difference between dog and different animals and different species, and just like internally and trying to critically think about, you know, this internally. So like a year or 2 years after getting my dog, I would just ask the question, like, man, like, I would be so upset if something happened to my dog, but why don't I feel the same about, you know, this chicken I'm eating or this cow I'm eating? Like, what's the difference, right? So I'd ask myself this, but I wouldn't really act on it. And finally, in 2017, I remember I went out with a couple of buddies and we went to Japanese barbecue, and we ordered like $500 or $600 worth of meat. Like, our bill was huge, and I ate so much meat that day. And I
what the hell?
Yeah, dude, it was ridiculous.
$500 to $600 worth of meat, holy.
Yeah. It was five or six of us, right? I don't know if you guys know what Japanese barbecue is.
No.
Okay, so
what is it? Tell us.
What the fuck? $500 to $600, but they bring like a cow in there.
Do they make the food on the table, right?
Yeah. So it's basically like different cuts of meat, right? So some are expensive. Like don't think it's just like the quantity. Like, some are like expensive cuts of meat.
Like Wagyu or whatever it's called?
Yeah, I think there's like Wagyu, Kobe or whatever, all that shit, but whatever. We can get that later. But basically they bring it to your table, it's raw, and then you have like basically a barbecue on your table and you cook it, right? So that's what Japanese barbecue is.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, the next day, dude, I felt so shitty. Like, I felt like just disgusting, like nauseous, like just not well, right? And I think that was the turning point where I was like, I gotta make like a lifestyle change. Otherwise I'm trending down a bad path, I think, when it comes to my health. And also, like, spirituality wise, like I couldn't handle like the concept of like what I was doing when it came to my dog versus chickens versus pigs. Like, I couldn't conceptualize anymore. I couldn't make an excuse for this anymore, right? So yeah, from that, like, that point on, August 1st, 2017, so I got the date, I went vegan on that date, and I just went cold turkey. And I originally was planning to just do it for a week. So I did it for a week and I was like, oh, it's not too bad. And I went to 2 weeks, a month, and now we're at, you know, 5.5 years of being vegan. So
how do you feel, like, health-wise? Like, what's different? Like, what's the difference? Like, do you feel a huge difference from when you switched to vegan from eating meat? Like, was there like a health boost, like, as people say, or what?
You know what, man, like, I think that's a little bit more of a myth, because I think it really just depends on your diet. Like, my diet was so bad, so me going to anything probably was a good thing. Does that make sense? Like,
yep.
I was not eating healthy, right? Like, there was no, my whole thing was just about getting as much protein intake as I possibly could, which is actually, you know, as more science is coming out, like, you know, a lot of scientists and dietitians are realizing you don't need the amount of protein that's been recommended to gain muscle. So yeah, there was, in my case, like an energy boost because my diet wasn't good, right? So I just added a lot more veggies, you know, a lot more, like, I was eating so much dal, so much more Indian food, you know, Thai food can be made vegan. So I was just eating healthier, right? Just incorporating a lot more fruits, vegetables, nuts, lentils, tofu, like these kind of products that are better on your body. So yeah, for me, there was an energy boost.
Did you go vegetarian first and then vegan, or was it just straight into vegan, like cold turkey?
Yeah, so for me, I went straight vegan because, I'll be honest, guys, I never liked dairy, right? Like, I was never the guy who would, you know, go to the fridge, get the dud out, and pour in a glass and just drink it. Like, that was not me, right? I never used to drink milk. The only time I would ever really have dairy was like in my jaw or like on pizza, like cheese on pizza. But today, like, I still drink jaw and I still have pizza, but my jaw is just made with oat milk and my pizza just has vegan cheese on it. That's it.
So you were never a pasta guy? You're not in the cheeses?
Yeah, like, I like pasta, but it's just, yeah, it wasn't like an earth-shattering thing for me to give up. I know some people are like, oh, I can't live without this, but I mean, for me, dude, it was not a big deal to give up dairy. It was more of an issue for me to give up meat than it was for dairy.
So I'm ignorant with this whole subject. So the vegan thing,
yeah.
It's mostly just the treatment of animals, right? So the dairy industry and all that, like, that's basically the reason why you don't want to touch any of that stuff. You'd rather have, like you said, oat milk and almond milk, stuff like that. Is that the main reason why people go vegan? Is it because of the treatment of animals?
Yeah, like, that's actually a really good question. So veganism is an ethical stance against the abuse of animals. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then plant-based is a diet. So they're two different things. You know, some people say I'm plant-based, and that's mm-hmm. just a diet they follow. And when you're vegan, you haven't, like, it's just your way to explain to someone, like, I don't consume or use products that come from animals because I have an ethical stance against how they came to life. So, for example, being vegan, I also choose not to use leather products or use products that were derived from animals, because to get those products, an animal was killed in the process, they were skinned, and then shoes were made out of them, or something was made out of them. And the same thing goes for food, right? Like, It's just an ethical stance against the abuse of animals. It's the same thing when it comes to meat. There's a slaughtering process that happened. And then there was also, abuse when it comes to dairy, right? Like, cows, the dairy industry is interesting. Like, they paint themselves to be a very, safe, proper, taking care of the cow sort of industry. But in reality, like, the only way a cow produces milk is when they're pregnant, right? It's just the same thing as humans. And in order for these cows to produce milk, they're raped, right? So they're inseminated, and they're basically pregnant their entire lives until they can't be pregnant anymore and they collapse and die. So that's the life of a cow in the modern world, right? And I'm not saying this is the case if you own a farm and you have a cow and they get naturally pregnant, you take their milk. That's a different aspect to it. But the way we commercialize meat and dairy is nothing but destructive for the animal, right? Because we're mass producing chickens, cows, pigs as like an item or as a good, right? They're a commodity. These living beings are so commoditized that they're in the stock market. There's like a market price for the price of cattle, for the price of hogs, price of eggs. And when it comes to that point, you know, there's a fundamental problem in what we're doing. And I think 100 to 150 years from now, you know, the next couple of generations are going to look at us and say, like, this is insane what we were doing. Because it's not sustainable, right? I have a different outlook on people who hunt and hunt for their meat, right? As long as they're hunting to consume the meat, I'm actually okay with that. I mean, I don't partake in it, but I have a different outlook on it, right? Because it's very different when you go hunt, let's say you hunt a deer, you consume the deer for its entirety, you didn't hunt it for sport, but you ate it. You know, you fed your family, you froze the deer or whatever, and it lasts you for a year or 2 years or whatever, and you consumed it. That's a lot less detrimental on the planet, the world, and when it comes to the abuse animals face, it's just overall, let's just say, a little more friendly, because there are going to be areas of the world where you're not going to have access to certain foods, right? That's just the reality of it. Like, I live in Vancouver. I'm glorified. I can go to a shop, like a grocery store, and get anything as a substitute. But if I live, let's say, in Yukon, you know, or like Northwest Territories, where hunting for food is very prevalent to this day, you know, it might be a different sort of situation where you can't go vegan and you have a very strong reason to hunt for your food.
So the farming, like you're saying, like, for example, like the dairy farm. So like, with them doing all like this messed up shit to the cattle and their livestock, this probably has started, what, maybe 50, 60, 70 years ago, you think? Like, when they really made like the farm into the farming industry and the dairy industry into like this like huge like factory style, you know, industry. Like, prior to that, it was all natural style way of getting milk, right? Like, or has it been longer than that? Like, that these industry style companies have been doing this with like the dairy industry, like, because I'm thinking back, let's say, like, for example, like during the Guru's times and stuff, like, you know, 350 years ago, people just had their own farms, and if their cow got pregnant, they just took the dodh from there and that was done. But so when did this, like, well, I guess my question is, like, when did like this messed up way of getting milk from cows start? Like, it has to be, what, 60, 70 years ago, right?
Yeah, like, it's definitely recent. Like, it's definitely in, like, I would say even more so, like, the 30, 40 years where it's got super commercialized, mm-hmm. right? Like, even if you look at today, like, your milk and even the meat, it's not natural, right? They have to pump it with so much antibiotics, so many hormones, because they can get cows to produce more milk. They can get chickens to get bigger. So the meat, or the, like, when they actually go through the slaughtering process, there's a lot more meat that comes out of these animals. So it is pretty recent, right? And like I said, as we commercialize these industries more, right? Because all of this is just for profit, right? Like, we're not taking any sort of like morality point of view to these industries, right? Like, if you think about it, like, do any of these cows or pigs or chickens want to die, right? Like, they really don't. Like, they don't have the choice. You haven't given them a choice. You're just raising them. You're basically throwing them in these pens with hundreds and hundreds and thousands of other animals, and then they're just living in there with disease. They're living in their own feces. And like, some of these conditions, like, you know, I've seen videos of pigs who are being traveled through temperatures of minus 50 and 60 on the highways from BC to Alberta. And these trucks are openly vented. It's insane. Half of these freeze to death just from the travel from BC to Alberta in the midst of winter. Like, there's no morality here, right? Like, I think that's the point of veganism, is like, a lot of people have this kind of negative connotation against veganism because people will think, well, these guys are a cult. Like, they're pushing their ideas on us. But really, like, all they're trying to do is reduce the strain and the abuse against animals. And that's their only motive, right? That is it. They don't care. There's no money to be made to be vegan. Like, no one's writing you a check. There's no incentive, right? But there's an incentive for people to eat and consume dairy, because there's a billion-dollar industry backing it. That's why you see commercials by the milk industry telling you to drink milk or drink chocolate milk after a workout, because apparently it's good for you, right? There's a billion-dollar industry here that's afraid that they are going to, you know, have a reduction of consumption as the generations get older and older, and newer, younger generations are realizing that, you know, this is a destructive industry. And you know, like I'll speak to Vancouver. Like, I think there was a stat that came out, I think it was last year, but basically 50% of the population in Metro Vancouver is either vegetarian or vegan under the age of 35, which is, right? So there's a big shift happening of younger people transitioning to a different lifestyle. And look, I'm not coming on this podcast to tell everyone, like, hey, you know, if you don't change your lifestyle, like, you know, you're a bad person. Like, that's not it at all, right? I just want people to just have a little more critical thinking of like the process of what they consume, right? Because everything you eat, there was some sort of shift in the world, right? Whether if it's an apple, whether if it's a chicken, whether if it's drinking your water, it's affecting the natural state of the earth in some sort of manner, right? And so as a person, I think we just need to critically think about these things. Like, even just asking yourself the question of why, right? Like, why do I eat meat? And when I asked myself that question, like, why did I eat meat? I didn't have an answer. The only answer I had was it tastes good and it's convenient. Mm-hmm. But the only reason I was doing it was because I was raised in a household that ate meat, right? Mm-hmm. So I think the biggest thing is it's critical thinking, right? Like, even if you change one meal a month, you're like, I'm just not going to have meat tonight, or I'm not going to have this glass of milk, right? It's just a conscious thing that you're trying to do to reduce the consumption of these products. And as you know, like, you might not think you're making a difference, but you are, right? And I think it all just kind of starts from that mindset.
Man, like, when I heard that you went vegan, like, I was like so dumbfounded, because I just remember the amount you used to eat. So then here's a question I got. So when you, for example, let's say you're gonna buy a car or whatever, then obviously you're not, then if it's like a leather interior, you're basically, or are there alternates now that you can get synthetic something? I'm sure you can get synthetic leather now, but I don't even think everything's 100% leather anymore. But like, is that in your mind? Let's say you're going to buy a car. Are you going to be like, if it's a leather interior, I'm not buying it?
Yeah. Like, I mean, it definitely comes to surface, right? Like, everything is like, my wife and I were looking for a couch, and we automatically ruled out anything that was a leather couch, because we were just like, we don't want to bring it in the home. And, you know, it just doesn't add value to kind of what we're trying to do as you know, or it doesn't fit into our values. But that's a good question, right? Like, this entire notion of veganism, like, it doesn't have to be perfect, right? Like, it doesn't have to be like so black and white, right? Let's say there's a car out there and it's perfect for me, and it might have leather seats, but it's in my budget. It gets me to where I need to be. And it's just one that fits. I would be guilty to say, no, I wouldn't take it, because I probably would seriously consider it, and I may buy it, even though it has leather seats, right? Mm-hmm. So this aspect of veganism, like, I don't want people to be like, you're either this or you're that. Like, it's not this sort of badge of honor, right? Like, it's not this club. Right. So when someone says you're vegan, like, I don't even want people to assume like I'm like in this secret society or something. Right. All it is you just try your best to reduce the reduction and the abuse against animals and living beings. That's all it is. Right. So there's no perfect way, because you're, at the end of the day, like, you're probably doing a million things in your day that are affecting animals in a negative way, right? Like, I go drive my car, like, that's affecting an animal probably, you know. I buy clothes online, and the shipping process or whatever, even these clothes being created, like, there's like, it's such a philosophical and debatable topic of like how much is too much and how little is too little. Like, all you can do is try your best and be conscious of your decisions. And that's the only thing I think we can do as humans, right? Because you can't change the way you live, right? Like, you're still gonna consume food. You're still gonna like even though I eat tofu, like there was destruction of trees to create these farmlands to actually create these areas where they can grow soy crop. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So the notion of having like a perfect life is not there, right? So like that's a great question to ask because there's no fine line. It's just trying your best to live a world where you're a little bit more conscious with your decision making, and you don't need to have a shift to, you know, eating meat today and no meat tomorrow. It can be a very simple decision of saying, I'm just not going to have meat for dinner on a Tuesday for this month. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's it. And that was your contribution to this conscious decision. I think the biggest thing is critical thinking, right? Like if you just ask yourself anything, like, why do I do something? Like, why do you wake up and brush your teeth? Well, it's to make sure your teeth are clean, you don't get cavities, and it serves you the purpose of the longevity and removing disease from the future and avoiding gingivitis and whatever, right?
Mm.
And if you just ask yourself, why do I do anything? And you can't give yourself a purposeful or meaningful answer, then it's time to reevaluate why you're doing that, right? So I think that's kind of the notion I would kind of say to people is just ask yourself the question, why? Like, why do I do this? Or what? Why does this benefit me? Or why is this purposeful for me? You know, there's a lot of good documentaries, but I don't want to get into the world of documentaries out there because a lot of them are so, what's the word? Like, they're so one-sided, right? And so, mm-hmm. like...
biased.
Yeah, they're very biased. And so, like, I have a hard time telling someone to go watch a documentary and you'll learn this. But it's like... you know, this thing, it has to come from within, right? Like,
yeah, it's your conscience, right?
Exactly. It's an ethical stance, right? Like you know, you're a really religious person, right? And in your shift from, you know, becoming more religious, Amritdhari, came from within, right? Like no one could have put it in your head and said, you have to do this. Mm-hmm. You just chose to make a change in your life because you thought it was a better way to live for you. Mm-hmm. And this is really the same thing, right? There's no difference. You know, there's, like I said, there's no right or wrong answer. There's no right or wrong time. Whether this epiphany comes to you today or it comes to you when you're 90, it doesn't make a difference, right? It's just, like, I want to come out here and just say, look, like, this is my story. And if you can relate to it in any sort of way, awesome. Like, you know, just... you just critically think about it, and that's the only thing I can really kind of is say. You know, it's not something that should be forced upon anyone.
Yeah, I think. Okay, sorry. Go ahead, Serpent. Yeah,
I was just going to ask. You know how people use the distinction between plant-based diet and vegan. So to clarify, mm-hmm. plant-based diet basically just refers to what you're eating, but vegan is like your total lifestyle where, in addition to your diet, you're trying to exclude, you're making your best efforts to exclude things like leather or other, you know, like any sort of mistreatment of animals, right?
Yeah, it's basically correct. Yeah. Plant-based strictly diet and veganism, more of a ethical stance.
Okay. The other thing I wanted to ask is, what do you think of these, like, you know, impossible meats at restaurants, yeah, and like, you know, impossible burgers and whatnot?
Yeah. So like health-wise, they're not good for you.
It's like synthetically built, isn't it?
It's heavily processed, right? It's just like getting a Kraft dinner from a box. Like it's processed, right? Anything that's processed. Like the ingredients in it are formed in a way where it resembles meat, right? And I don't even know if they've been really designed for vegans or people who are already vegan or vegetarian. I think honestly, like they've been created for people who maybe eat meat and want to introduce more of a plant-based lifestyle to their day-to-day. Because I'll be honest, I don't really like impossible meat or beyond meat. Like I'll eat it. Like if it's like late and I don't think everything is closed, like I'll go through an A&W drive-thru and get a Beyond Burger. Like if I have to, right? Like, but to tell someone like, hey, this is good for you and it's a lot better than like better health wise than meat? No, that's not accurate at all, right? So my thought process, like the original question, like I think it's awesome that companies are going and making products that resemble meat. But I don't think they're marketing it in a way where they're saying it's better and healthier. I think they're just telling you like, hey, this is similar to the texture and taste of meat, and here's an alternative. Mm. So that's my
problem. Yeah. I think what I've noticed and stuff, like sometimes like you have like those hardcore vegans that like try to put down people and stuff, and I think that's where a lot of vegans get a really bad name. And I feel like the same, like sometimes you have like those really, really, really outspoken, sometimes like you have like Amrdari people who like openly like put down Monet, or people have haircuts of this and that. Like it's just, and it just puts a bad name out for everybody. And because there's like a stigma with vegans, what I've realized is that, you know, they're egotistical, or they think their shit doesn't stink, or you know that they look down on you just because you eat meat or whatever. And I think that's where like hearing like from you like how you think and stuff, I think if people met more vegans like you, I don't think that weird stigma behind somebody like that veganism movement would be there. I just feel like there's the people that hold the blowhorn for vegans sometimes shoot themselves in the foot. Am I right? Am I wrong? I don't know. Well, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very interesting point and this question, right? Like, if you think about the overall like what vegans are trying to accomplish, the accomplishment is not necessarily for any sort of purpose in the sense of like monetization. They're not benefiting it. Like, how can I say this? They're not independently being benefited by you going vegan, if that makes any sense, right? Like, typically, there's always a selfish reason for someone to get you to do something, right? Like, if you look at Jehovah's Witnesses, like if they convert someone, they're going to go to heaven or whatever. I don't know what it is, but do you know what I mean? Like, there's like a selfishness to why they want you to do something, right? And I do absolutely agree. There are vegans out there that I have personally met and I personally know who are very maybe aggressive in the way they're trying to get their point across, which doesn't sit right, I think, with people. I don't know if people react or take that, you know, well, right? Like there's a different approach to talk to people. And I think that's just more so people's personalities, right? Like people are very opinionated out there. At the same time, people are very defensive, right? Like I'll talk about me, myself, like I was very defensive when I was a meat eater towards against vegetarians and vegans, because I did not want to look myself in the mirror and say to myself, like, you know, that's actually fucked up that I am eating this and I'm not even thinking about it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no critical thinking. Like I'm living in a world of avoidance, right? And denial, because at the end of the day, like, you are consuming an animal, you know, who is factory farmed and slaughtered, right? Because that was their life. But you're not giving any critical thought because it's just served on your plate and it looks nice and it tastes good, right? So that's your only relationship with this living being, which is wrong, right? Because I think the thought process of food hitting our table, we need to think about where it comes from, how we get it, because there's a lot of places in the world where, you know, you're not being able to get that. Like if you look at countries like India, where majority of the population is vegetarian, because of the lack of access to meat and how expensive meat is, right? That's the main reason why India is such a strong vegetarian country, is because meat's very expensive. So yeah, like going back to your original point, like, you know, I think there's definitely learning lessons that can be taken on the vegan side of things, like, and how they try to deliver their message. I think for sure there are people who are way too aggressive and way too righteous, maybe the way they come off, because you're not better than anyone. We were all, or I shouldn't say all, but majority of us were once people who ate meat or consumed dairy. And, you know, we were no different than anyone else, right? So, like, to put yourself at a higher hierarchy or think of yourself better than someone is ridiculous, in my opinion, right? I think at the same time, the other side of it is people just need to be more open to the message of what these people are trying to accomplish. Like I said, if they were profiting from it, if there was like some sort of incentive for them to make people change their behavior, I would absolutely think of this differently. But there's no selfish aspect to this, right? Mm. They just want you to be more conscious with your decision making to help the life of someone else. And for me, sometimes you do have to be a little bit aggressive, or you do have to stand up a little bit harder. And it's the same thing when you look at human rights issues, right? You have to be that way a little bit, right? If you look at like the stance in India, in Punjab, the farmer stance, you have to be a little bit out there to get your point across. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think it's very similar. You know, this is an animal rights issue, and humanitarian issues are kind of similar in the way that these things are presented. I think like socially, like we've been ingrained to accept what we eat and not question it. And I think because of that reason, because it's so common practice, like if you look in, you know, 200, 300 years ago where slavery was okay, no one flinched an eye. But today, if someone was a slave, you'd be like, what the fuck? You know what I mean?
Mm, yeah.
So, and that changed with human rights movements and the aggressiveness of people wanting a change. So I think that's kind of an answer to that question.
Hey, Tara, did you face any like social consequences when you went vegan? Like when you go to parties or, you know, get togethers or
like within the Punjabi community, right, Sarpanch? Like within the Punjabi community?
Yeah, like let's say if I go to Purone's house and, you know, they like, yep, they offer John, I'm like, I can't drink John. Like, do you have any oat milk, you know?
Yeah, dude. Oh, all the time. I mean, dude, it started with my parents, right? Like, I remember when I went vegan, like, my mom thought I was going to die. You know what I mean? Like, you're already so skinny, like, you're going to die. But the thing is, like, one, I'm, like, in the best shape of my life, right? Because of the way I've changed my diet and the way I've changed the way I live and eat. But to answer that question, yeah, man, like, there's a lot of social stigma, and it's the same concept like you guys were discussing last week when it comes to drinking, right? Like if you refuse someone's drink or someone asks you why you're not drinking, it's kind of the same concept. Like, you know, like, hey, I don't eat meat or I don't have dairy, and people will ask you why.
Yeah. But
I think in Vancouver at least, like, it's so common now that, you know, it's, you know, with friends, it's definitely a little more acceptable because they're younger and they might understand it more. But definitely in like with parents and even, you know, like, you know, cousins and uncles and aunties and going to weddings and going to different functions and trying to explain it, like, yeah, it can definitely be frustrating. But at the same time, you know, you can't be too frustrated because for them it's an unknown, right? Like, you just have to explain, like, hey, look, this is what I eat. And if they have more questions, you can answer them. But I think you almost have to be a little bit of an asshole when you answer these questions. It's almost like you guys were talking about it last week, you know, like almost having to sometimes avoid functions or avoid weddings or whatever because you don't want to even talk about why you're not choosing to drink. I think you just have to be very straight up with people, and it's okay if you hurt someone's feelings, right? Because, you know, everyone's a little bit softer these days, and I think you have to stick to your guns, right? Like you
got to set boundaries.
100%, and you can't be afraid to set these boundaries, right? Like, you know, I used to be a pretty big people pleaser, Like I used to say things that made everyone happy around me, and I did things to please everyone. But as I get older, I noticed, like, you know, I got to be more true to myself, and I got to be more true to what I believe in and my values. And look, I always welcome debates and open discussions. Like, I could be wrong. If someone wants to tell me I'm wrong and they want to point out why, like, I'm more than happy to listen to you. Like, and that's, I think, the most healthiest way to live your life is being open, right? There's no right or wrong way to do anything. So when someone does have, I have these awkward moments with, like, and auntie and or whatever, like, I'm just straight up like, no, sorry, I don't have this. Or even going to the gurdwara, you know, when going down to the langar hall and like refusing half the things, it's awkward.
But well, like, I was gonna say, like prashad has butter in it, you know.
Yeah,
sabjin dal has butter in it. So when you go to the gurdwara, like practically speaking, like, you've sometimes you have to avoid prashad. Is like, or what do you do, like, practically, what do you do?
Yeah, so like, I'll be honest, when I go to the Gurdwara and Matha take, I will have a little bit of prashad, like, just, I always ask, I'll just say like a little bit, you know, and usually like the granthi is like pretty good. It gives me a little bit or whatever. Right. But even going down to the longer hall, like, yeah, just, it's refusing majority of the items. Right. And maybe some of the items might have butter in it. Right. Like, I don't know for certain, but I try to pick items that I genuinely think and know that they're going to be vegan, right?
It's like dal, right? Like, dal is probably your staple then.
Yeah, dal is my staple, right? It's usually rice and dal is what I usually have. And sometimes they have prashad that without butter, right? Depends. Sometimes the gurdwara have like separate sections or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, it's not like a restaurant. You don't have time to be like, or you can't even ask, like, so what's in here, right? What's the ingredient? You know what I mean? Like, not gonna happen, right? So there's definitely those.
It's like some kids doing serving it. You're like asking him, like, "What are the ingredients?"
Yeah,
just crying. The kid starts crying.
Yeah.
Well, dude, it's the same thing when you're traveling, right? Like, I've been in situations where I've traveled and I haven't ate 24, 36 hours because I can't find anything vegan. You know what I mean? And that's happened to me before. And so it's just, you know, like, it gets to a point, right? Like how far are you willing to go? Like, there might be a point where you might have to break something or break your value or traditions just to survive. And, you know, if that point ever came, you know, that's what they have visit. But, you know, it happens, right? Like, these are good conversations, because I think everyone's biggest fear, I think, when they make a big change is, like, how they're going to be thought of. Like, it doesn't matter when you quit alcohol, it doesn't matter whether you change, make a big lifestyle change or whatever it is. Like, your biggest concern is usually what people are going to think of you and how is this going to affect my friends, my family, and my social life, as opposed to yourself. Like, you need to always put yourself first in these situations, and you always need to be a little bit selfish in your decision making, especially when it comes to with your, what your beliefs and values are.
I was going to, maybe relapse is not the appropriate word, but you kind of hinted on it, right? I was going to ask, like, have you ever accidentally or even on purpose, like, had something that had animal product? And you said sometimes you'll have a little bit of prashad, but have you ever, like, had chicken or actual, like, meat since you went vegan?
So I did. Never purposely had meat. I was in LA. I was at a cafe. I ordered a vegan, like, BLT sandwich.
Yeah.
I got the sandwich and I took like two bites out of it and I was like, shit, man, like that vegan bacon is so good in LA. Like, fuck, that's amazing. Like, it's so much better back home. And then, like, I took another bite and I was like, man, this seems so real. And I, like,
oh my God.
I showed my buddy. And I was like, dude, try this. He's like, dude, I think that's like actual bacon because that tastes exactly like my sandwich. So I go up to the front of the cafe and I show the manager. I'm like, hey, I ordered the vegan BLT. And I was like, is this vegan? She looks at me. She's like, are you vegan? I was like, yes. And she's like, I'm so sorry. So, like, the manager, dude, she was also vegan and she was so hurt by like me eating the bacon that she started crying. So it was like, yeah, it was like at first I was like about to freak out, like I was about to leave my shit. I started crying. I was like, oh man, like she's more affected by this than I am. You know what I mean?
You know what that reminds me of? Remember when those beers fell on you at Boston Pizza? Yeah. And then the waitress started crying?
Yeah.
The waitress was crying. Yeah.
you gotta tell that story.
So basically,
it was like four or five beers that fell on you, right? Because she was serving the table and she was walking behind Tara.
It was like
And Tara was, it was two pitchers, sorry. And you were you were unaware of what was happening because you weren't facing the waitress, but we were facing you. And basically, two pitchers full of beer just literally fell on you.
And they were right on your actual head, not on your
Oh, I know. And you know what the craziest thing was? It was like snowing outside. It was so fucking cold.
Yeah. We had to go back to your house to get you changed, remember?
Yeah, I had to go. And my mom was like, why are you changing? Like, what happened to you? I actually changed and ran out the door.
Oh, man. Yeah, like you got like a true golden shower there, man. Like that was a lot of beer, man. That was a lot of beer.
Yeah, I took one for the team because I think she covered the bill.
She did. Yeah, she did.
Yeah, so that's all right. That's okay.
Yeah. But it's honestly, Terry, but it's commendable that how you, again, like your whole story of how at one point you were eating so much meat and now you've changed your lifestyle. Also, I find it also commendable, with being vegan and the way you are, how you're very conscious of the suffering of other beings, right? Which is, I think a lot of times we just kind of just forget and we don't give a fuck about. And having that sensitivity or having that soji, as they say, or having that soch about other living beings, I think that's something that we can all learn from vegans and stuff. Let's say you don't agree with going full on vegan or whatever, but you still got to commend how that type of mindset where you live your lifestyle really thinking about other living beings. And I think society as a whole, not only with animals but with human beings, I think we need more of that. I think we need more of having that daily soch or having that type of conscience, as they say, about other things around us. And sometimes we live such a life that's almost tunnel vision. We don't give a shit, you were saying, whatever comes on the table, we don't care about where it comes from and all that. Living that life of tunnel vision and selfishness, I think we as a society have become so used to that now, and we almost live a life like robots. We don't give a shit, almost like a cold, having a cold personality and not caring. And yeah, I find it commendable, just the way not only your change that you had from before, but just the way your mindset is. I think, in broader society, we could learn a lot from that. And I know our gurus and Sikhis is always about thinking about other people and other beings and caring for everybody and stuff and not being so selfish in life. And I commend you on your lifestyle and your mindset and all that. That's cool. On how you've kind of forged yourself into this type of human being now in your life.
Yeah, I appreciate the comments, man. And I just want to say thank you for letting me, come on this podcast. I know you guys are doing great things with it. So, I just want to say thank you for just letting me even tell my story. And, even if this has touched one listener or even given anyone, a chance to consider their decisions or whatever. You know, I think that's a good thing. And like I said, this is this thing of veganism. It's not a cult. It's not a club. It's not a society. It's just your way of thinking. If you don't want to call it veganism, call it something else. It doesn't make a difference, right? Just try your best. You know, think about where things come from. Think about the sacrifice of other beings. And yeah, I like I said, I appreciate the time, guys.
Yeah, no problem. I actually have another follow-up question. I was wondering, like, so what are your main sources of protein now, or what's like a typical day like a meal plan? Do you have something generally that you kind of abide by?
Yeah, so like I eat a lot of Indian food, like a lot of dal, a lot of like chana masala. You know, that's like a staple in my diet. I eat a lot of tofu, stir fries. I'm not as addicted to knowing my protein intake like I used to be, but I've just noticed, like, just living a more balanced, healthier lifestyle along with my diet has changed me health-wise for the better. So, like, you know, I go to the gym. Like, I'm lifting, you know, my peak. I haven't lifted my bench press is at PR. Like, it's my personal record. My squats are PRs right now. My deadlifts are PRs. The diet hasn't affected me negatively in the sense of like being unable to be a physical performer, right? It's a lot of people have that stigma, like, oh man, you're not going to get those gains, or you're not going to be as strong as you once were, or whatever. But I can tell you right now, like, if that's your fear, like, you don't have to worry about it. I mean, yeah, if you go into this and you're crushing Impossible Burgers every night and like synthetic meats or whatever, and like bread or whatever, like, you're not consciously thinking about what you're eating, like, it's not gonna be good, you know what I mean? Those are my main protein like sources. A lot of lentils, you know, tofu, chickpeas, you know. And then the cuisine, like, dude, there's, like I said, in being in Vancouver, like, I don't know how it is for everyone, you know, what's in the cities that they live in, but like, there's so many restaurants. Like, any restaurant I go into has like a vegan menu. There's so many vegan restaurants. There's just so many choices that it's like super easy. Like, I was recently traveling. I went to North Carolina to play golf for work, and there was nothing.
That's a different culture out there, eh?
100%. Like, I ate maybe 300-400 calories a day. Whereas
what you eat, but then what you eat then? Like, what in North Carolina?
Like, I was eating like a salad with no dressing, because the only dressing they had was like what is it, ranch? I was eating like fries. So there's like little things like fries. I know they're probably fried in like a fryer with meat, but like at that point you gotta like just try to survive. You know what I mean? Like,
You're on a golf course too. You're probably fucking exhausted. Whatever you can.
Yeah, it was for work. So because it was a work trip, I couldn't like go travel at my free will and go drive somewhere and grab something. I was stuck on like a golf resort, which, you know, sadly only caters to rich white people, which is going to be like steak, you know, ribs, like those kind of cuisine or those dishes. And like, you know, there's not many options, right? And so those situations, like, you know, granted, I'm not in that situation very often, but it's tough, man. Like, that's when you're like, fuck, like, you're annoyed. Like, it's definitely not easy. But, you know, I'm used to that stuff. So like, I know where I'm going to go. So like, I'll pack travel snacks. Like, I'll pack granola bars. I'll pack like noodle cups that are like vegan, you can get from Trader Joe's. Like, I'll pack like protein vegan smoothies or vegan shakes. Like, I think there's definitely more planning more than anything. I think that's the biggest thing about this diet, being plant-based at least, is you got to plan, right? Like you got to think one step ahead when you're traveling specifically.
Yeah.
But at home, man, like it's super easy. Like I'm getting 3,000 to 4,000 calories a day with proper protein intake. And the thing that really helped is, dude, my wife is vegan as well. So like it's
yeah,
really,
I bet that helps.
You know, like she's a really good cook and she's making things all day, every day. And like, I'm pretty spoiled, you know, when it comes to that. So, you know, I know not everyone has that fortune. Right. So, yeah, so that definitely helps.
That's awesome.
Yeah. That's, North Carolina, man. How, as a Punjabi guy, how was it out there, man? Did you get freaking stared at?
Yeah, I mean, like, I can tell you there's not many Punjabis in North Carolina. I was staying at Pinehurst, which is a pretty big golf resort in the States. And I went to go play golf there. We had sales meetings out there. So it is interesting, right? Like I work in the golf industry and it is a very interesting industry being a, you know, Punjabi guy, you know what I mean? Brown skin. I don't have white skin talking to people in this industry, there's definitely a little bit of, let's just say like a lack of respect, maybe initially, at least like they are thinking the wrong things heading into meetings, which is unfortunate, but you know, like I'm well educated. Like I was given the resources to be educated and appreciative to my family for that. And, you know, I'm able to, you know, do my job well. Right. And I think you're always having to prove yourself a little bit, I think, in these industries. And I think it's the same for many people. Maybe for you, you know, like you're Amritari, man. Like, so I know you've had to deal with your things, like, and you're always kind of having to prove yourself a little bit, which is frustrating, but that's just the way we have, like, we live in this life. It sucks. We have to do it. But like you said earlier, man, like we're all educated people and, you know, we were given the resources to become educated and we just have to set an example and, you know, always put our best foot forward every single day and yeah, just prove ourselves one, even though we don't need to, but it's just the way the world is.
Well, Terry, you're breaking barriers one vegan meal and one golf course at a time.
Yeah. Well, you opened our eyes a bit because I was ignorant on the whole vegan thing. I knew very little, but yeah, the vegans that I've come across, whether it be in person or online, they're very brash and they kind of, even if you're vegetarian, like let's say you're vegetarian and you drink dood, like how can you? So yeah. It was kind of like, you know, it was kind of like off-putting or whatever is the word, like if that's the good word to describe it. But
yeah,
I think the way you described it and everything, I think it'll give people some information if they want to look into more of like animal cruelty in these big industries, whether it be dairy or meat. Also, Sir Punch, we hit 1,500 listeners. So,
Thank you this morning.
So we have to thank all the listeners. We started this podcast, 2 months ago? Yeah, 2 months ago now. And yeah. I would have thought we would have had like 50 listeners, 25 of them being family. So So thank you to everybody listening. And I thank you for all the messages we get. People saying like they appreciate our very straightforward type of talks and stuff and not censoring stuff. I think a lot of people are kind of sick and tired of a certain parchad, which is almost polished a little bit, maybe yeah. Is that the right word? I don't know. But again, there are some great parchadics out there. We're not saying we're fucking great or anything, but I think there's a certain population of the youth that kind of want more of a, as layman's terms, as they say it, right? Like we don't call ourselves experts or anything, but I think next episode we're gonna have somebody who was a heavy drinker and totally stopped cold turkey one day. They decided that they were just gonna stop. So we're gonna get their story on that. And again, we like having people on here with like these stories of change.
Yeah.
Right? Like they lived a certain type of life before and then now they changed it to another type of life. So again, you know, we love hearing these type of stories. I like hearing these type of stories. And yeah, no, I appreciate it, Tara. Thanks for coming on, and we'll in the future we'll bring you on again, and maybe we'll find somebody who's on like a carnivore diet on the podcast and get their perspective too, right? So it's always good to get other perspectives from different spectrums, right?
100%.
Yeah, right? Tara, we appreciate you coming on. I think people are going to find your insight very helpful, and your change very helpful when people are kind of like on the fence of, you know, making a not just like a vegan change, but any sort of lifestyle change.
Yeah, like I said, I appreciate it, guys, and thank you for having me on. You guys are doing awesome things, so keep it up.
Like, yeah, and to all those fucking idiots that send messages of, like from Afghanistan and like parts of like Eastern Pakistan that say all this stupid shit about Sikhi and stuff like that. I mean, if you guys don't fucking like the history, that's your fucking problem. And like, you get a lot of messages with people saying some fucked up shit, like, "Oh yeah, we raped your women, this and that." If you're proud of doing that type of shit, then that's why we shit kicked you as a Qom before. So if you don't, again, I know you're listening too, because we have people who listen and then they like to fucking chime in. So hey, if you don't like that, you got your asses kicked. That's your fucking problem, man. But we did what we did. We saved many, many women from your guys' clutches, right? So those people that are messaging being proud of fucking doing that type of shit to women, you should be fucking ashamed about that, man. But anyways, Terry, good show, man. Thanks for coming.
Good show, Terrence.
Yeah, cool. See you guys.
Okay.
Very
good.
See
you. Good show. Good show.
Great.